life will never be the same because of it. I praise God for it.
They have to live on a budget. They have to know where every dollar is going. They have to know what debts they have to pay, what obligations they have to meet, and they have to establish priorities.
I hated a budget, but I ended up getting the hang of it and ended up being more of a blessing than it was anything else.
Money goes into a hole unless you tell it, you know, where it needs to go.
Budget to me was like a straitjacket. It's this thing used to punish you.
Budget is not indentured servitude. You're not a slave to your money or something like that.
David made a sheet with columns with clothing and shelter, insurance, all the necessities. And we actually really did that budget. And we did it for months and months and months, and it definitely helped.
I put together a household budget, started putting money in envelopes for the cash items, and shortly thereafter, my wife was laid off, and it had virtually no effect on us.
I've dipped into funds over here that were for something else specifically, just to please my kids.
They don't know how to plan those things that don't happen monthly, but happen this year.
We don't fight about money anymore. That's a wonderful feeling.
It is.
It is. It's a wonderful feeling.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
This is probably one of the most important sessions we are going to have, because this is where we have the opportunity to take all the things we teach you, from investments to saving to getting out of debt, all the different things, the elements of financial peace, and this is where you put clothes on them and walk them down the street. This is the dreaded budget lesson. Ooh. That's great. It's a cash flow plan, okay? It's a spending plan. So turn to your workbooks in the cash flow planning lesson, and let's look at that for a few minutes. Zig Ziglar says it well. He says, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. So what I want you to think about here is, all we're doing with money is we are going to tell it what to do. One of the best quotes on budgeting I've ever heard is from John Maxwell. John Maxwell said, a budget or a cash flow plan is simply people telling their money what to do instead of wondering where it went. How many times have we all had that V8 moment at tax time? When you go through the taxes and you go, We made $68,000. Where did the $68,000 go? You know what I'm talking about? You have that money. Or you get a large deposit, maybe a commission check or a bonus check. Or one time Sharon and I received an inheritance from a relative that passed away. And, you know, we had spent that inheritance 62 times before we got it, right? You know what I mean? And then when it came, we still don't know where it really went. We had all these plans, all this scamming and scheming going on, and none of it actually turned out that way. And I think the reason is that money has some philosophical properties to it, if you will, that you have to understand if you want to win with it. The first one is that money is active. Money moves all the time. That's why they call it currency. It flows, okay? It has its own life. And I'll tell you this, you will either learn to manage money or the lack of it will always manage you. Don't miss that. That was good. You will either learn to manage money and choose to do so, or the lack of it will always manage you. Money is active. It's moving. All the money comes in, all the money goes out. Only the names are changed to protect the innocent. Almost as if we were the federal government, you know? Like we didn't have a plan. Just, it goes straight through there. Dr. Stephen Covey says in his fabulous book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and if you've not read that, you need to, the number one habit of people who are highly effective is that they are proactive. They happen to things. Everything doesn't happen to them. They decide to be in attack mode rather than victim mode. Perpetually. That's the deal with money. You will either pounce on it and tell it what to do, or it will leave you and go to someone else who is managing it. It's a universal law. Money flows from those who do not manage it to those who do. So what we're talking about here is you need to do the written cash flow plan. Now let me just tell you, this budgeting thing, this cash flow plan thing, this handling money thing, this whole idea of capturing something that we've never bothered to impact before, it's a new thing and it's going to happen by degrees. You're not going to start from never having bothered to being an expert in one day, are you? Most people in America today wander through life like Gomer Pyle on Valium. They wake up at retirement and go, Shazam, I'm broke. And if we suddenly wake you from that trance and go, okay, you're not an instant expert. It takes practice. And my mother used to say, practice makes
perfect.
Yeah, you know the drill. I remember one time when the first time we made money, before we went broke, we decided we were going to be cool and go snow skiing. Because that's what we knew that some of the rich people that we knew did. They went snow skiing. So I called my travel agent and I said, where do the cool people go to be snow skiers? And she said, well, if you're really cool and you're going to spend the big bucks, you go to Aspen or Vail because that's where they charge the most. And so I said, well, let's start at the top of the alphabet. We'll start at Aspen. I said, what else do the cool people do? And she said, well, they book a condominium at the foot of the slope so you can ski in and ski out. You wouldn't want to have to walk if you were cool. I said, okay, well, book us a condominium. So she booked us a condominium at the foot of Aspen Mountain. Now, we've never been skiing. We fly out there, land, go to the ski shop. We're renting our skis. And I said, well, we're beginners. Get us really good equipment so because we want to learn. And he said, well, where are you skiing? And I said, Aspen Mountain. He started laughing. I said, what's wrong? He said, well, you don't know about skiing, do you? And I said, no. I have a nice condominium. I'm cool. At the bottom of the slope. And he said, well, you can't use it. I said, what do you mean? He said, Aspen Mountain is an expert double black diamond mountain only. You will fall down it. You will not ski down it. You will have to go down the road and ride the bus. I said, cool people don't ride the bus. So here we go with our skis on the bus to Buttermilk Mountain. Sounds fairly innocuous to me. But no! So we go up there, brand new snow skiers. You know, they get you up on this little slope about 4 feet high, right? And then they make you do the most uncoordinated thing, and you knock-kneed pigeon-toed, right? You snow plow down this thing. Some of you know what I'm talking about, right? Really felt uncoordinated. And I finally got to the bottom. I'm like, yes, Rocky is skiing. Yes. Didn't fall 4 feet down. Yes. And then they graduated us up to the rope slope. You know what that is? It's where one of those ropes is running up through there. It doesn't stop. And you will grab hold. You'll get to the top whether you're standing or not. When you get, you know, it's like, woomba, right? You know the drill, right? And once we graduated from the rope slope, they took us to the bunny slope. Now, that sounded very sweet and pink and flowery. This was a very large bunny. And come to find out, the truth about the bunny slope is that you're not there to learn to ski. You're there to learn to ride the chairlift. Because that's the biggest mistake beginner skiers make is they fall off the chairlift or their equipment does. So all along under the chairlift up the bunny slope is equipment and spouses, you know, right? So we get on, we manage to keep all of our equipment. We're riding up the chairlift. I'm going, Sharon, we did it. We're cool. We're ready. And about the time we thought we had it all together, we looked and there was a problem developing at the top. As the skiers were getting off, they were piling up. I said, Sharon, we got to have a plan. I don't want to be in that. You're on the right, honey. You go wide right and stop. I'll go wide left and stop, and then we'll be okay. But we got to dodge the pile. Let's have a plan. Tips up, because you don't want to, like, you have your tips catching. You go, boom, you know, right? So we got our tips up. We're ready to go, and we get up there. I go wide left. She goes wide right. She never stopped. She never snowplowed. She just pointed them right at the restaurant. Nothing I can do about it. She's just gone, right? I mean, I can't catch her. I'm just, whoa! And I told the instructor, I said, my wife left. He said, well, she'll slow down when she hits it. It's okay, you know. So it took us an hour to get to the bottom. She's like, where y'all been? You know? We finally get down there. Well, we skied all day on the bunny slope, and finally, years later, we learned to ski the greens, the easy slopes on Buttermilk Mountain. And then we later the blues, which are the intermediate. Nowadays, after we've been skiing for many, many years, it's the blacks. But we didn't start out on Aspen Mountain, did we? We learned this by degrees. We started on the 4-foot slope. Some of you didn't start out budgeting. And so you're going to mess it up for a little while. Just don't quit. When you fall, get back up. You're going to fall. You're going to make mistakes. I make mistakes, and I've been doing it for many, many years, okay? I teach it, and I make mistakes, so it's okay. We're going to make some mistakes. You're going to fall down, dust the snow off, and keep going. You have to do a written cash flow plan. The Scripture tells us to do this. To summarize the Scripture, Jesus said, don't build a tower without first counting the cost, lest you get halfway up and all who see and are unable to finish. And all who see you begin to mock you, saying, this man began to build and was unable to finish. Don't build a tower without counting the cost. The average household income in North America today is $40,816. If we take 4 years of that, that would be $160,000. If you were going to build a home for $160,000, you would use one of these, wouldn't you? A blueprint. You would have all of the electrical laid out. You would have all of the heating and air system laid out. What floor covering, what wall covering, where the walls and the doors, which way they swing. Every detail would be designed before you turn the first shovel full of dirt. And yet the next 4 years of your income does not have a plan. It doesn't have a clue. It has no idea where it's going. You would never spend $160,000 on a home without all the details handled. And yet, the average one of you in here, the next 4 years of your income represents $160,000. And you don't have a plan. If you manage money for a company called You Incorporated, and your job was to manage money for You Incorporated, and you manage money for You Incorporated the way you manage money for you now, would you fire you? Oh, I see way too many heads going, uh-huh. You know, I mean, how do you expect to win doing that, really? I mean, honestly, you're going to get blessed when you are a blessing. That's how that's going to happen. When you become diligent, you will prosper, the Scripture says. You have got to become excellent at this. That's what wealthy people do. Now, a budget is not a straitjacket. This is simply people telling their money what to do instead of wondering where it went. And it kind of starts with some of the basics, like keeping your checkbook balanced. Everyone got real quiet. Because some people in here have an account at Ricochet Savings and Loan. They're writing these 911 rubber checks. I know that some of you think the way you balance a checkbook is that means bringing the total down. Some of you don't even do that. I've seen you in the shopping mall. I see you writing a check and you're looking and the total is up here and the checks are way down here, several layers below, and you're looking going, looks like we can get one more in. You know? You can't manage money that way and expect to succeed. You've got to quit writing rubber checks. Never, ever, ever again in your life write a check until the money is in the bank. Now that sounds really basic. It sounds like I'm teaching a 7th grade general business course. But do you understand that almost no adults follow that basic tenet? They write checks, mail them on Thursday night because they're going to get paid on Friday. They go in Friday morning, their company filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and they're not issuing payroll today. So what do we have? Bounced checks. Well, there was a snafu in the direct deposit. Great. Check to make sure the direct deposit's in there if there's been a snafu a time or two. because direct deposit messes up sometimes, doesn't it? I like direct deposit. I personally use that. But if it messes up two or three times, maybe I ought to check before I start writing checks. We have to stop and think. Be just a little bit more conservative. We live so close to the edge that we absolutely cannot win. Bounce checks are a sign of crisis living, sloppy, lazy money habits. Now, some of you in here honestly do not know how to balance a checkbook. And it's sad that you can get out of school and not know that. By the way, it's on the back of your bank statement if you were to open those things, okay? And look at them. Flip it over on the back. It'll walk you right through it. But also, just in case, we have a ABC simple explanation in the addendums there in your workbook. You'll be able to go through and learn how to balance a checkbook. You need to learn how to do that. You need to teach your children how to do that. Some of you, the spouse has always done it, and you honestly, at 42 years old, don't know how. Listen, there's no shame in that. The shame is if you don't start today and say, that's enough. That's enough. It's ridiculous that I'm 52, I'm 38. It's ridiculous that I'm at that level and I don't know how to drive a car in our culture. I don't know how to balance a checkbook. You have to stop today and make the decision. I'm going to take all this mask off that quit says that, and quit saying I'm cool when I'm not, and sit down with your spouse and admit, I do not know how to do this, and learn, because it may be you that's left there to manage that. And then you're going to be lost as a ball in tall weeds. It's not going to be fun. Learn how to balance a checkbook. If you have to, you can even use carbon checks. I know we were doing counseling one time with a couple, and I was trying to get their checkbook to balance. I could not figure it out. I mean, it had their normal entrance. They were always bouncing checks. You know, they had their house payment, the car payment, the bank here, you know, $328, house payment $742, and the daycare, you know, $38, the ESP $78, and, you know, grocery store $42, and it just went on down, and I kept looking at it. Finally, I said, the only thing I can't figure out is, what is this ESP $78. The guy says, error someplace. This is not how you balance a checkbook. Other budget busters and things that can keep you off balance are the ATM card and the debit card. Now, I don't tell you to tear those up. I tell you they're okay, but be very, very careful with them and never use them on impulses. Only use them as a part of the implementation of your overall game plan. Okay, you have to now plan your impulses, okay? There's no way around it. That's the deal if you're going to win at this money stuff. But Dave, I don't want to do a budget. Some of your spouses told you, I'm going to take you over there. Dave Ramsey's going to put you on a budget. And you're like, I don't want to get that Dave guy away from me. I don't want to do a budget, Dave. Doing a budget makes me think of bread and water. That means I'll never be able to rent another video or buy another pizza. We think of it as a straitjacket. It's none of that. A budget, a cash flow plan, a spending plan is simply you telling your money what to do. I honestly don't care what you do with your money. I'm going to give you a lot of suggestions. I'm going to give you the baby steps on how we implement what we do from here and what your best order of priority if you want to have financial peace and win are. But at the end of the day, I have found that adults are pretty intelligent if they bother to do it on purpose. It's this not bothering thing, this Gomer piling thing that messes you up. All you've got to do is bother. It doesn't have to be bread and water. You can do whatever you want to do. It's your money. All I care is you do it on purpose and you quit spending more than you make. If you'll just do that, you will start to wake up and win on some of these issues. Another reason we don't want to do a budget has been used to abuse you. Your parent or your friend or something has said, you know, your grandparent or maybe your spouse is saying, it's not in the budget. It's not in the budget. Dave Ramsey said, it's not in the budget. Wearing you out with this stuff. They're using a budget as a tool to control. This is a control freak issue. This is not a budget problem, okay? And some of you nerds need to back off and let some of these free spirits have a little room. The elbows are going. I see them working out there, okay? And then this thing will loosen up and you'll start to do it together because budgeting is not a method by which you make other people behave. Budgeting is a method by which you make money behave. Now, there's a big distinction there for those of you especially that are married. Another reason we don't want to do a budget is we never had one that really worked. You know, we've all tried it. You remember when you first set up housekeeping, you do the yellow pad budget. You remember the yellow pad budget? You do? Okay, let's see here. Let's see here. Student loan, Circuit City. Let's see here. Victoria's Secret. You know, you got to have the whole thing here, right? You got to, and let's see here. Rent. Oh, yeah, food. You remember doing this? And you get down, you total it all up, and then you look at the income versus the outgo, and you're like, whoa, dude, there's a problem. And then you're sweat on the upper lip, and you're going, oh, how am I going to get out of this? Oh, what are we going to do? Honey, okay, we got to have a plan here, okay? Turn off the TV and get in here. Bring the remote. It's mine, too. I have the checkbook and the remote. I am ruler over all. Get in here. Now, honey, I got a plan. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to eat every other week, okay? You remember doing this stuff, right? And you finally get the thing to balance just barely, and then the car breaks the next week, and you go, this budgeting stuff, it doesn't work, right? Ah, no way, I can't do it. Why? Because you left out car repairs as a category. Cars are going to break. Maybe car repairs ought to be a standing category. Some of our households, at times, it's had to be the whole budget. You know what I'm talking about? Some months it gets completely out of control. You've got to budget a whole picture of your life. You have to address the reality of where you are on paper. When you do that, you'll start to win like you have never won before. Now, some of you go, well, I've like sort of kind of got it in my head, Dave. It's like in the Quicken. You know, I've got it in the software, and I can sort of see it, and I can tell if we're off on a percentage. No. You don't understand. You have to write it down. The whole thing. No way around it. Another reason we don't want to do a budget is paralysis of fear of what we'll find. I don't want to discover how bad it is. The bill drawer has stuff growing in there. And you reach a hand in there, you draw back, and there's no hand. You know, it's, right? It's bad news. And sometimes it's fear of just admitting how bad we've been. We've all messed up. I've done stupid with zeros on the end. Some of you have paid some stupid tax, are about to pay some stupid tax. Stupid tax, of course, is when you do something stupid that costs you money. I have paid stupid tax with zeros on the end. I understand this. It's okay. We're all humans. We're all in this together. You're going to mess up, or you have messed up. You might as well put it down on paper, deal with where you are so you don't have to live where you are for the rest of your life. That's the idea of financial peace. I had one old guy, he said, you know, we finally wrote it down. We figured out where we'd figured out what we've been spending the last several months. We've been spending $1,200 a month on cotton picking restaurants. He said, I'll figure it out while we don't have a retirement. We've been eating it. You know, I mean, it's just, woo, scary stuff, isn't it? We're afraid of what we'll find. And that's another reason people don't do a budget. It's a thing called denial. And I'm not talking about a river in Egypt, okay? Now, cash flow plans don't work many times if you leave things out. If you leave out car repairs and the car is constantly breaking, well, guess what? If you leave out kids' clothing and they come in with their pants up to their knees, here we are heading back into school, then you've got a problem, right? When you leave things out is when you will mess your budget up. You'll crash it every time. Another reason budgets don't work is if you overcomplicate them. Now, this would be addressed to the nerds in the audience. These 17-page spreadsheets that are merely on the computer, and it takes an MBA, a master's in business, to figure out your budget plan. Nobody's going to live on that. It's too complicated to start with, or you spend every night in the computer. I mean, what kind of life is this? And for sure, the non-nerd spouse, the free spirit, is not going to participate at this level of detail. Don't overcomplicate it. Keep it simple. Keep it easy. This is personal finance. This is not corporate finance. You're not trying to impress someone to get a promotion. You're just trying to keep your money from leaving on accident. That's all we're doing here. Another reason budgets don't work is you don't actually do one. Now, that could be a detail. Another reason we don't have budgets that work is we do one, but it's this theory thing. It's this, oh, look at our budget. But then we don't live on the budget that we wrote down. You have to actually do one, and then you actually live like the piece of paper says, or you change the paper. Now, let me give you a hint. As you start putting together your budget, and I'm going to give you the forms and teach you the details tonight on how to do that, okay? As you start putting this together, your budget will not work the first month. It will not work. The second month, it will not work, but a little bit. About the third month, it'll start to work. Now, we've talked about having the emergency or having the budget committee meeting where the nerd and the free spirit sit down and come into agreement. That's the first draft. That's the first thing. Next week, you'll have to change that. You'll have to have an emergency budget committee meeting and make some adjustments. And then you'll have to have another one. You may have to have them every day for a while. Because basically, when you've been going along for 13 years or 7 years or 27 years and never had a plan, you still don't have a clue of how your life really looks on paper. And your first month, you're going to be lousy at it. That's okay. Keep trudging. You're on the bunny slope, okay? It's okay. Learn to ride the chairlift. Then the next month, you'll get a little better at it. And by the third month, it'll actually start to work. And that black eye that you tempted to hit your husband there, ladies, that thing will start to heal at that point, okay? So it takes about 3 months for this stuff to actually kick in and work. Reasons we really need to do a cash flow plan is a written plan removes the management by crisis from your finances. Now, many folks in here and in our course nationwide are struggling. They say, I can't do a budget, Dave. I don't have enough money to pay everything. Hey, we didn't either. We were broke. We were losing everything. We were getting sued. We were getting foreclosed on. Everything's going crazy. But what we did was we managed what we had. Now, what that means is you write down everything that you're going to do and you do as much as you can do. In that situation, you take care of food, shelter, clothing, and transportation. We call those the four walls. You take care of those four things before you do anything else. I don't want to hear about your house being behind and you being current with MasterCard and your student loan. That's bad priorities. Food, shelter, clothing, and transportation are first. And so what we're doing is we're going to spend the money. And what we used to do is when the money ran out, you know, the list kept going, right? And we wanted to pay everyone. We just didn't have the money. Do you know what I'm talking about? Has anybody ever been there but me? You know what I'm saying? The money ran out before the stuff did, before the list did. We would draw a big line there. And everyone below the line that month did not get paid. I remember I had a collector call me one time and was just chewing on my ear. Calling my mother names and everything else. You know how they just, they're going crazy on me, right? And I said, well, I'm sorry, I can't pay you. You're below the line. And he said, do what? I said, you're below the line. I don't pay people that are below the line. He said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, we do our budget, and when the money runs out, we draw a line, and the people below the line don't get paid, and this month, you're below the line. He goes, you're kidding. I said, no, I'm not kidding. You're below the line. You don't get paid. He goes, well, I got a question. How do I get above the line? I said, you're nicer next time you call. Have a good day. Managed money, when you tell money what to do, it works harder. A budget is a money stretcher. Money goes farther when you are managing it. It's amazing. It's like managed time. How many of you have ever been to a time management seminar of any kind? And you go back. When you manage time, you get more out of it, don't you? When you manage money, you get more out of it. There's no way around it. A written plan, if actually lived on and agreed on, will remove many of the money fights from your marriage. We've talked about, and we will talk about, the unity that your marriage will have. When you come into agreement on what you're doing with your money, then you'll be winning. And the money fights will go away. A written plan, if actually lived on and agreed on, will remove much of the guilt, shame, and fear that may now be a part of buying necessities such as food or clothing. I can remember many times when we were broke, as we wrote a check at the grocery store, I had this tinge of fear inside of me that we had just spent the money that we were going to use for the electric bill. Anyone relate to that? As I wrote a clothing check for my child, which is a necessity, I wondered if I had just spent the mortgage money. because I didn't know. When you put it all down and you can see it before you write those checks, then as you write that check, you have an immense amount of peace because there's not all this conflict and this wondering about what's happening going on. It releases stress. A written plan, if actually lived on and agreed on, will remove the bounced checks. See, a bounced check is when you write checks because there wasn't money. And then it comes back, NSF, insufficient funds. They're way too expensive. They mess up your budget big time, and you should never have a bounce check if you have a written plan, because you would never write a check that wasn't in one of the categories where you had already preordained where the money was going to go. You never write a check that doesn't come out of one of those categories, ever. If you want to change the category so you can write a check, fine. But if you're going to raise that category, you've got to lower another one, as we're going to learn, okay? That'll remove stress from your life when you get rid of the bounce checks. This living on the edge thing, this living scared all the time, this looking over my shoulder, wondering when they're going to shut down my bank account, wondering when they're going to come get me or something. I mean, this has got to stop. Life is too short to live like that. And if you'll just spend a few minutes every month without the stupid television on and sit down and plan and sit down and write it out, it's amazing what will happen and what will be turned loose in your life. Also, overspending will stop. Like the guy that was overspending on restaurants. He discovered when he sat down that they were overspending on that category. Now, $1,200 a month in restaurants in most households would be overspending, okay? And in some of your households, it could be a whole lot more, a whole lot less on something else. You need to look. I don't know if you're overspending on clothing. I don't know if you're overspending on entertainment. And only you can ultimately decide that. But what it makes you do is look at it in the context of your whole life. See, purchasing that leather couch might be an okay purchase, but it might not be if you look at the context of where you are and say, gosh, we don't even have any money set aside for emergencies. I don't think this leather couch is an emergency. If you're fully funded emergency fund and you have extra money laying around, then that leather couch could be an okay purchase, right? And you might go and get a bargain on it and use your $100 bills, right? And so the whole thing starts to stack up and work when you put it in context. The easiest and most powerful way to do a budget is the zero-based plan. Zero-based means we're going to give every dollar of your income a name before the month begins. Before the month begins, the first of the month is coming up, for the rest of your life, before that month gets here, you have a term paper due. For that month, not the perfect generic month from heaven, that month never happens, does it? That's the average of all the previous months in Quicken. It doesn't happen that way, does it? You've got this month. This month might be vacation. It might be Christmas. It might be Thanksgiving. It might be wedding month, you know, where you've got all those gifts. It might be something else. Every month has its own characteristics. They have different types of utility bills, whether it's cooling or heating. So this month, you spend this month's income on paper. Income minus outgo equals exactly zero. That's a zero-based budget. And implement a thing called the envelope system. Now, this is Grandma's old system of handling cash. Sharon and I first did this in the middle of a big fight. I kept accusing her of spending too much at the grocery store. There's always this big fight. She said, I'm not overspending. You're just not giving me enough. And we're struggling back and forth, and we're having one of these yelling matches. I know you guys never do that. This was many years ago. We don't do it anymore. But we were just at each other's throat over this money stuff. It was not pretty. You know what I mean? And when finally I said, look, how much do you need for money? How much money do you need a month for food? And she said, $600. But if you can give it to me every single month and not mess with me, I can do it on $500. I said, done, but don't you dare go a penny over. And so we started on this conflict basis. We didn't start with this, honey, let's try a new concept. You know? And we started with this envelope thing, and all we did was say, okay, every payday, what are we going to set aside for food? What are we going to set aside for food? Well, what we're going to do then is we're going to write a check for that amount. We're going to cash that check. We're going to put that cash in an envelope. And we're going to mark the envelope food. And so what normally happens is you deposit your paycheck now, you go to the grocery store and write a check, right? All I want you to do is add a step. You don't have to save up to get started on this. You just add a step. Instead of depositing your check and writing a check, you deposit your check, write a check, cash it, put the cash in an envelope. $300 cash in an envelope for this pay period for food in there. Now, we buy all our food out of this envelope. And we never buy any food again except out of this envelope. Period. If you leave home and forget the food envelope, you have to go back home and get the food envelope. No cheating. And I'll tell you, food at our house means grocery store stuff. We keep it pretty simple. We have a large budget for hairspray. Now, the truth is that if that envelope gets kind of empty, and I'll give you a hint, the first time you do your food envelope, overfund it, because you're wrong, okay? You think it's less than it is. Overfund it. You can always lower it later, right? If there's a bunch of money laying around in there, you'll find something to do with it. But if you underfund it, it'll be kind of, well, there's this Ramsay diet thing going, you know? And I want you to lose weight maybe if you need to, but don't do it on this basis, okay? So the drill is, what we're going to do is we're going to put the cash in an envelope. We're going to buy all our food out of this envelope. We're not going to buy anything out of this envelope except... Now, if you get to the end of the month and there's money left over in here every single month, then you're over budgeting this category. You lower the category down a little bit, right? If it happens for just occasionally because you went to Triple Coupon Thursday and got a really good deal and there's some money left over, well, reward yourself. Go out to eat. That's food. Or go to the warehouse store and buy that 9 gallons of mustard you've always wanted. Now, this system has been around for many, many years. I didn't invent this. This has been around since the 20s. As a matter of fact, one of my most prized possessions is this. It was sent to me by a guy in Spokane, Washington. He found this at an antique store. It says budget envelopes. And it was a little envelope system where they could keep up with their cash right here inside. It's very interesting because as I was looking at it, I happened to look down and notice the calendar that was stapled to it. Here it is, 1948. Isn't that cool? And as I looked at it, I read one of the accounts that says Hawaii. You know what? I bet they got to go. Because they were telling their money what to do and they systematically saved for it. Does anybody remember a generation when you used to save for years to go on a vacation? That's a whole nother mindset that we've completely lost. Now you put it on your home equity loan. How dumb is that? I mean, the best vacation you'll ever have in your life is one that doesn't follow you home. Okay? Try the envelope system for some things. We don't do this for everything. We don't carry around big wads of cash. But in your Financial Peace University system, you've got an envelope system. We've recreated it, and we have our own program here to help you do the same thing. For some things, try it for a few things. If you're nervous about it, I'll tell you, try food and try clothing. Those are two we mess up a lot. And do your normal procedure for everything else. But try it. Wade in. Hey, if I'm wrong, you can always go back to your way. Let's look at the forms. As you do, you're going to see the baby steps page. Stop on it first. And I want to look and walk down what we're going to do with money as we find it. The very first baby step, the first goal, is to have, help me. Good. $1,000 in the bank. That's a beginner emergency fund. Then when we get to the debt lesson, we're going to learn about the debt snowball, and we're going to work our way out of debt, everything but the house. And we're going to do that very quickly with great intensity. And then the next step is to go back to, with no payments but a house payment, that $1,000 account, raise it to a fully funded emergency fund. A fully funded emergency fund is how much?
3 to 6 months
of expenses. Very, very good. In most households, that's going to be represented by somewhere around $10,000. And remember, that helps the ladies relax, gentlemen, okay? That's one thing you're really going to want to do. Now, when you've got $10,000 cash in the bank, you don't have any payments but a house payment, is life pretty good? That's starting to look like financial peace. That would put you in about the top 3 or 4% of Americans. Do you understand that? No payments but a house payment. And $10,000 in the bank. You would be wealthy by most people's standards, net worth-wise, in our culture today. Because most people have a student loan that's been around so long, they think it's a pet. Okay? Now, step four is then we're going to begin our long-term investing. We'll talk about that in detail. 15% into retirement. We'll do our college funding at about the same time. Then when we have money left over above college and retirement, the emergency fund is done. There's no payments but a house payment. We're going to pay off the home as quickly as possible. And with that done, with no payments at all, could you build some wealth really, really quickly? I promise you could. And baby step seven is build a ton of wealth and give a bunch of it away. Now let's look at major components of a healthy financial plan. Several pages over, and you have a form that says action needed and action date. That means if you don't have some of these things and you need to do them, write it down and give yourself a date, a deadline by which you're going to accomplish this goal. The first one is to do a written cash flow plan. That's what we're doing right now. We're going to learn how to build a budget. The second one is you need a will. 70% of Americans die without a will. Dumb, dumb, dumb. If you really hate the people in your life, die without a will because you're going to tie them up for years. Get a will. Again, you ladies, 75% of you will outlive your husbands. Make him get a will. One of the biggest gifts I have given my wife, Sharon, is we have what is called my love drawer, and that is a file drawer in our home in my study where you roll it out. It has all of the insurance. It has letters of instruction on every piece of thing in there, a full will, a full estate plan, all of our investments where a four-year-old can walk through them and know exactly where they are. Sharon goes through them with me periodically, so if an airplane goes down, she is taken care of. It's turnkey. That's a gift to her. The same in reverse. If something happened to her, I can walk in there and I know right where everything is. That's diligence. You won't prosper until you have it. The third thing is a debt reduction plan. We call that the debt snowball. We'll cover that in the debt lesson. The fourth thing is a tax reduction plan. Vote. The next one is an emergency fund, and we have talked about the emergency fund. A fully funded emergency fund is how much?
3 to 6 months
of expenses. Very good. The next thing is retirement funding. That's baby step four. We're going to put 15% of our income into retirement funding, college funding, charitable giving. We will talk about that in a lesson and how to give intelligently and give spiritually. Teach your children how to handle money. We'll talk about that in the relating with money lesson. Of course, life insurance. We'll talk about that in the insurance lesson as well as disability, autos, auto insurance, homeowners insurance, which would include renters insurance. You need all of these things. If you don't, as we learn about them going through these lessons, take action. Don't wait until it's too late. Don't wait until you're diagnosed with diabetes at 32 and find out you can't get life insurance. Oh, well, I should have done that. Too late. Too late. Okay? You need to take action on these things. Write it down in there. Some of these things right now, you already know that they're a weakness area. Take action on them. The next form is the consumer equity sheet. Accountants would tell you this is how you calculate your net worth. If you look carefully, it's what you own minus what you owe, which equals the equity in the item. Our example here is if you own a $90,000 home and you owe $70,000 on it, well, you have a $20,000 equity. If you own a $7,000 car and you owe $10,000 on it, you have a negative $3,000 equity. If you have $1,000 in savings, that's $1,000. So bottom right-hand corner down there where you see the $18,000, if you put $1 million in that corner, you're a millionaire. No, you can't just like put the million in there. I mean, you really have to have the stuff, okay? But I mean, that's how you become a millionaire. What you own minus what you owe will lead you to your net worth. Now, we used to call this our hope sheet because we were going along and it didn't feel like we were making any progress. You know, we were knocking bills out, but it seemed like life wasn't getting any better yet. It had been a year, it had been 2 years, we were hitting on this thing and it didn't seem like it was hitting that curve where there was still, it felt like a gerbil in a wheel. You know what I mean? I just run, have a heart attack, and, you know, just boom, that's it, right? That's the deal. Fall over, that's it. Now, what we would do is rewrite this sheet ever so often. And what we would see then is as our savings came up and our debts went down, we would start to see that net worth come up. And that gave us hope. Hey, we are making progress. This is incrementally winning. And you need to rewrite this at least once a year. But while you're in the soup, you ought to rewrite it once every 2 or 3 months to remind yourself you really are making progress. As the debts go down and the savings and investments go up, you are starting to win incrementally at that point. Now, what we've got to do if we're going to build a budget is we have to figure out what our income is. Now, what our income is really simple. There's a bunch of possible sources. Most of your sources are the top 4 or 5 categories there, but I put a bunch of other things down just to remind you, you might have other income sources. Let's do a budget for a couple called Joe and Susie. Joe and Susie make $1,700. On the 1st and the 15th, Joe gets paid $850 and Susie gets paid every 2 weeks on $650. This is their take-home pay. That's what I want you to deal with. Take-home pay. You haven't got anything else to budget anyway. The rest of it's a theory, okay? So whatever you've got to bring home, let's do a plan with that. Let's tell it what to do. Now, Joe and Susie, 1st and 15th and every 2 weeks. You can already tell a problem's going to develop, can't you? Because ever so often, those 2 weeks in that 15th thing doesn't jive. How many of you get paid every 2 weeks? You know what I mean when I say twice a year you have a magic month? You get 3 of those checks, right? Usually around July, maybe October, depending on how your company is set up, somewhere in there, right? And somewhere in there, you're going to get a 3-check month twice a year. So you need to tell in that month 3 checks what to do. It's not like, well, we'll take this over here and pretend like it's not in there. It's your money. Tell it what to do, okay? If you want to blow it, put it in the blow category, but at least admit it on paper, okay? So the income category, you do this every month, figure out what your income is for this month before the month begins. Now, how many of you have an irregular income? You're straight commission, self-employed, that kind of a thing. Okay, we're going to get to you in a few minutes, but I want you to follow the rest of this because you're going to need it too. I can't do a budget because I don't know what my money is. Yeah, I've got one for you. Okay, everybody, nobody gets out, okay? Everybody's going to do one. Now, the next form then is the one that trips us up. These occasional payments that aren't monthly, don't they come along and hit you in the back of the head? How many of you pay your car insurance quarterly? I used to do that for years. There's nothing wrong with that, but it used to feel like I would pay and get caught up, and about the time everything was okay, then it would come again and hit me. I was off balance all the time. You know what I mean? Because every time that thing came around, it's smacking me around. Whatever you have that is a non-monthly expense, you have to put it on the lump sum plan, and you put it in there, you divide it by 12, your annual expense, divide it by 12, and put it into your monthly plan so it doesn't sneak up on you. My home is paid for, so I have to pay out of my pocket my real estate taxes once a year. How many of you pay real estate taxes separate from your mortgage? You know what I'm talking about then. That one will sneak up and take you off the back of your head, right? Boom, right? If you're not ready. So I take it, divide that figure by 12, and put it in the budget. If you want to replace a piece of furniture, you have a 12-month plan to do that, well, that's a $600 item. We're going to divide that by 12. We have a $50 a month expenditure. We're going on a vacation. It's $1,800. When we go on that vacation, we're going to pay cash. In order to get there 12 months from today, we divide it by 12. That's $150 a month. Gifts for Christmas, hey, that's a pretty good Christmas, $1,200, right? Divided by 12 is $100 a month. Remember, Christmas is in December every year. We have to aim at that, okay? Now, your monthly cash flow plan, now here's the actual budget, okay? Here's the plan. Here's the system. Now, this is a 3-page sheet. Look at it very, very carefully, okay? There's 3 whole pages of categories. No one but God has enough money to put something in every category. These are simply a checklist, a reminder. Make plenty of copies. You can give copies to your friends. I give you permission. I own the copyright. As long as you don't sell my budget forms, you and I will be friends, okay? Help people with them. I don't care. Be liberal with this. Enjoy this system. Take it. Help others with it. Use it. It really works. There's 3 pages here. Now, the idea is that we're going to spend our entire income on paper here. Now, Joe and Susie, do you remember what their monthly income for this month was take home? $3,000. So we've got to spend $3,000 on here. Now, Joe and Susie are tithing on their net which may or may not be correct. We'll talk about that one day. And they're going to put $300 aside for charitable giving. They're going to put $50 towards their emergency fund. They're going to put $725 on their mortgage, $50. Remember, they're replacing furniture from the lump sum. So see, $725 and $50 added together come to the center. You see the subtotal of $775. Ba-boom, ba-boom, move to the right. $50 and $725 is $775. Look at the utilities. Electricity, $100, $50, $50, $50. Add those four together, you get the $250 in the right-hand middle column in my example here. $600 and $100 for groceries and food is a total of $700. The total of that page is, in our example, $2,075. So again, we're giving every dollar a name throughout the month here. We're going to spend the whole $3,000 in these three pages. Now, if you look carefully at the next page, at the bottom of it, you will see the blow category. You need to fund the blow category. You need to fund the blow category for two reasons. One is it's real. You're going to blow money, and you need to plan to blow money. Things aren't going to work exactly as they do on paper. This is your slush fund. This is your grease that makes the machine roll. You need to blow some money. I know some couples that do a his and her blow envelope. That's okay, as long as you're doing it on purpose. And you need to put something in the blow category. This thing of thinking everything works perfectly with no room for movement just creates friction. You need some grease in there and let this thing work. The second reason you need a blow category is it is in memory of your former plan. Now you take the third page of that, and you'll notice at the bottom you have totals. Page 3, 2, and 1, total, for a grand total of exactly what the income is. So if you'll notice, remember from the first page, we had a total of $2,075. We made up totals for the other two pages of $405.25. It has to add up to exactly $3,000. Income minus outgo, you see the zero is printed in there. Okay? Income minus outgo has to be zero. Well, what if it's not? Well, you go back and unspend something, or you go back and spend something. If you get to the bottom and you only have spent $2,900 and you have $3,000, you have to go back and give that other $100 a name. I had one guy come in and he said, "Look, Dave, I got $479 left over. I won." No, you didn't get it. Okay? Because if you leave $479 in your checking account without a name on it, the termites will carry it off, right? I mean, it just disappears, doesn't it? Have no idea where that money went. Unaccounted money. If you're going to blow it, at least admit it. If you're going to blow it, at least admit it out loud. Now that we've built the overall monthly budget, let's look at what some of the percentages are. Now, some of you nerds need to be careful with this sheet. Some of you nerds take this sheet way too seriously. This is recommended. This doesn't mean life on the planet's going to come to an end. Dave, like I added it up, and like, look at housing, Dave. You've got 25 to 35% of my take-home pay should be housing. My housing's 36%. Do I have to sell my house, Dave? You nerd. Lighten up a little bit. It's an idea. It's a concept. It's a range, okay? But the idea here being is, if you look at transportation and you see 10 to 15% and your car payments are running 30 or 40% of your income, there might be a problem, okay? It's an indicator. I remember counseling with a little couple who said God had given them a car. Even the finance manager said it was a miracle. Their car payment on a $1,200 take-home pay was $600. And I said, you need to sell the car. Well, I thought you were a Christian counselor. Don't you understand? God gave us this car. Honey, God did not give you this car. I am sure of that scripturally. How do you know? Because the scripture says the blessings of the Lord have no sorrow added to them. This looks sorrowful to me. Well, you mean we really need to sell this car? I said, honey, it's 50% of your take-home pay. You either need to sell it or make plans to move into it. You're mean. No, I'm saying out loud what should have been said at the car dealer. You can't afford this car. That's what this recommended percentages does. If you're way over on one of those, let that be a bell going off and saying something may need to change here, gang. Okay? Now, allocated spending plan. This is sheet 7. This sheet is also 3 pages, and it is just like sheet 5 category-wise. The only difference is, not only are we going to spend your entire income on paper before the month begins, now we're going to take each week and spend that week's check on paper. If you only get paid once a month, you don't need to do this, okay? If you get paid more than once a month, though, you need to break it down and spend every check on paper. It'll take you just a few minutes. The way this works is you go to the left of the slash with the expense. The right of the slash is your remaining balance in that pay period. Let's look at Joe and Susie. You remember they got paid 1st and 15th and every 2 weeks. Susie gets her paycheck on the 1st for $650. She gets paid on the 1st and 15th. This is August as an example, okay? 650 minus 75 in charitable leaves to the right 575. Shake your head if you see that. Okay? 575 minus 50 leaves 525. 525 minus 50 down at replaced furniture leaves 475. 475 minus 100 for electricity leaves 375. Do you see how I'm doing that? I'm spending her check right down that column. Now you go to 8-8. Now she doesn't get paid that week, but Joe does. He gets his $850. We're going to spend that. We pick up the house payment there. 750 out of that 850 leaves 100. 100 minus 50 for the phone leaves 50. 50 minus 25 leaves 25. And again, we've spent that week on paper. Are you beginning to get the idea? Please say yes.
Yes.
Good. Now, on the third column, 8-15, that's the week they both got paid, and you notice the fourth column, they don't get any money. See how that funny 1st and 15th and every 2 weeks thing works, right? Okay, and you line it up, and you know, all you got to do is look at this month's calendar. You can tell when you're going to get your checks, and you give every one of those dollars a name for the week, and you take sheet 5 and you superimpose it over onto the same 3 pages here on sheet 7, and it's all laid out before the month begins. Now, the only thing that changes is if you change something in the middle of the month. And if you change something, if you raise a category, because we're going to spend more on restaurants, then we have to lower another category because, remember, we have spent it all. If we just raise one category and we don't lower something else, we've busted the budget or we've gone into debt. Is this making sense?
Yes.
Good. 3 people got it. Okay, now. Irregular income planning. If you are straight commissioned, if you are self-employed, this is your form. I have lived on this form most of my life. How many of you have a salary in your household, but also in addition to a salary, have some irregular income of some kind? Some bonuses or commissions. Okay, a lot of people have that. How many of you just have irregular income? See, a lot of people have that. Now, we live just irregular income on this off of a yellow pad for years. All this is, you make a list of the things that you couldn't get in your salaried income. You did all you could with your salaried income, but you got things you want to do in addition to that. Okay? You wanted to go on a trip that you couldn't afford in the salaried income. You wanted to pay more on the debt that you couldn't afford in the salaried income. For those of us that are pure straight commission or self-employed, it's all on this sheet. And you use sheet 5 to kind of look at this one and remind you what to do. All this is you make a list of the things that didn't make the cut, the line, they were below the line on the other budget. They didn't make it. They need to be done, but they priority-wise were lower on the list. You make a list of those things. Now, Joe and Susie have a few debts that they want to take care of, and Joe gets a quarterly bonus based on profits in his corporation with our pretend couple. And what they're going to do is then list these things that didn't make a cut by order of priority. Whatever they think the priorities are, they decide the priority. They decide in advance what is important and in what order. Put it in the order that you want it done. They did that. They decided they wanted to pay off their smallest debt, which was a JCPenney's card of $150. Then they wanted to pay off their Sears card, and Susie really wants a couch, so they saved half of the money toward the couch. Then the vacation they wanted to save some towards Christmas, and once they got all that done, if they had some more, they wanted to knock off that little Visa card that they owe $500 on. This is an example of what they wanted to do after they had done their other things. Now, if you'll notice on the far right-hand column of that form, you see a running total. Penny's at $150 plus Sears is $250, if you look to the right, is $400. Plus 500 for half a couch is 900, plus 200 is 1100. The right-hand column is a cumulative running total. Do you see what I'm saying? Say yes.
Yes.
Good. Okay. Now, that means if you get a bonus check in for $950, what are we going to pay? Pennies, Sears, half a couch, and 50 towards vacation. See, your money's already spent on paper before the month begins. Even if you don't know what it is, as far down that list as it will go, it's already spent. So always write the list longer than your irregular income is going to be. If whether it's giving or extra savings or just wealth building or paying off the house, I mean, whatever, it could get real bizarre down at the bottom, right? But always make that list longer than you can get to this month. So if you have a surprisingly good month, it doesn't run off the page. Okay? You need to give every dollar a name before the month begins, even if you have an irregular income. Now, this is one of my favorite forms. This is the breakdown of savings form. Now, too many people do what I call the traditional savings account. We know we need to be saving money, so we have a savings account. And what ends up happening is we put money in the savings account until we find something we want to impulse on that's really big. We build it up and blow it, build it up and blow it, because we don't have a plan. And what happens is if you blow it out on Christmas, then when it's time to go on vacation, you have no money. If you blow it out on the vacation, when it comes time for Christmas, you put it on the credit card. If you don't have a game plan and tell your savings what it is. See, savings should never be miscellaneous other than the emergency fund, and that's not miscellaneous. That's for emergencies, okay? So every dollar in your savings account needs to have a mission statement. It needs to have a goal. It needs to be labeled. I don't care what you label it, but you tell it what it is. You could have an impulse category in your breakdown of savings, a blow category there, right there under other if you want. I fully intend to blow $1,000 and I'm going to save up and do that on purpose. I don't care as long as you do it on purpose, okay? That's the big thing. It's this accidental money management stuff that I'm sick of and then wake up at retirement broke and expect to tax me to pay for your stupidity, okay? I'm tired of this stuff. It's time we got on top of this and decided we're going to handle this stuff. Most of you will handle millions and millions of dollars in your lifetime. You have to tell it what to do or it will leave you. There's no way around that. Now, the way this works is each month you do a column. Now, if you'll notice at the bottom, there's a total. Joe and Susie had $2,200 in September. They had $2,500 in October. They had $2,800 in November. Now, $2,800 sounds like a lot of money, but not if you understand that some of it is set aside for the dentist because we have some upcoming braces. Okay? Not if you understand some of that is set aside for vacations. Now let me tell you, if you go on vacation and you go on a cruise and spend $2,800 and pay cash for it, you were still unwise in this scenario because that means you can't have Christmas, no braces, and you'll never get to replace the furniture. You're living in a dream world. That's not going to happen. You're going to end up going in debt for the rest of it. Okay? Now can you move some things around in here on purpose? You bet. This is why this is my favorite sheet. Let me tell you what happened at my house, okay? Sharon really needed a china cabinet. Now, I don't understand china cabinets. I don't understand china that we don't use, and I really do not understand a $2,000 cabinet to put it in. I just don't get it, okay? I'm a guy. It's a guy thing, okay? I don't understand this concept. But she wanted a china cabinet, and our furniture fund did not have enough money in it. We had the money set aside to go on a snow ski trip. Ha! Can you imagine that? And in the vacation fund. Well, there's a guy's snow ski trip coming up at church, right? And I wanted to go on the guy's snow ski trip, but I wasn't going to say anything because this is our family vacation money, and so there we go. So she comes up with this brilliant idea. She's going to move her portion of the snow ski trip over into furniture. She buys the china cabinet, and I get to go snow skiing with the guys, and I'm a hero. I love this form. I love this form, okay? See, think about this. What this created was communication and give and take in my marriage. And every marriage needs communication and give and take. It gave us a basis rather than all this power struggle and back and forth. You start to figure out ways to do a win-win negotiation at home. Now, the debt snowball form will be covered in the debt lesson. And there is a form for those of you that are struggling called the pro rata plan form. And that will be covered in our collections lesson. So be sure not to miss either one of those. Those are very, very important forms. But now let me recap. Here's the deal. Use the envelopes. The envelopes are a real thing. I will testify, I will promise you, a success story standing here tonight, you will find in Sharon Ramsey's purse to this day envelopes with cash in them. She really does this stuff to this day. We really fund those out of our budget every single month. Our children really are on the envelope system for giving, saving, and spending, the way we teach in the Relating with Money. You will find those little envelopes right there in our household. We really do this stuff. You know why? Because we got sick and tired of being broke. And we figured if we're going to work for a company called You Incorporated, we want to be proud of the way we manage money. Let me tell you what, God's not a fool. He's not a fool. And the parable of the talents in the scripture is really, really clear. If you manage His stuff well, He will give you more to manage. But don't be shocked if He doesn't flood you with tons of money when you do a poor job handling the money He gave you to manage now. You have to be faithful in the little things. I know that's tough. I know it's hard. It's hard for me. This is not a natural thing for me. Natural for me is just going to go along enjoying life. But God makes me teach this stuff every day because I'm one of the worst ones in here. That's my nature. But I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. I got sick and tired of being broke. I got sick and tired of being normal. I don't ever want one of those collectors to call my house again. I don't ever want to have a banker with his thumb on my neck again. And the only way to avoid that is for me to tell that money what to do. The only way for me to get control and have that communication in my marriage, the only way for me to change my family tree is to tell that money what to do. You have to tell it what to do. You do not have a choice. Some of you are going through Financial Peace University. You think this is a nice little class and I'll just observe these videos. I'll enjoy these lessons and I'll go on my way. You can't just go on your way. You will be messed with in your conscience the rest of your life. You will have to do this stuff or you will live with this horrible disease called regret. You got to do this stuff. Don't build a tower without first counting the cost. Lest you get halfway up and you're unable to finish because you didn't plan. And all who see you begin to mock you saying, "You're normal." Don't be normal. Be weird. Thanks.
What I've learned is that how that a budget is a help to me, not a restraint or not punishment for my past spending practices or habits. Mm-hmm.
It also really warms your heart a little more when you see him pull a $20 or $40 bill from his, you know, his loan money to buy you something versus laying down the credit card. It feels like he's really giving.
For me, being single, it's really terrific for self-accountability because without a written budget, it's really hard for a single person to really keep everything in check with themselves.
I've done the envelope some 15, 20 years ago, but the problem was she says I never put enough money in the envelopes.
We had a budget for food. We had a budget for clothes for the kids. We had all those kind of things set up through our envelope systems, and it just started working so smooth for us.
One thing that really helped us was beginning to understand the importance of tracking your spending and spending every dime on paper before you spend it anywhere else.
I cannot do it. She cannot do it alone. It has to be done together.
We always tried to budget, but we would start it for a while, but then we would stop it for whatever reason.
I've lost 17 pounds this year on a diet. And people say, okay, well now you can get off that diet. You can stop dieting now. Well, no, because then you're just gonna go back up again. This is the same thing. These principles got us where we are today financially. They've given us so much peace in our life applying these things. Why in the world would we stop doing them?
Credit cards reek.